And where the trust comes in is devotion. Devotion to be an instrument of service on behalf of the liberation of myself and liberation of all beings for the benefit, to be of benefit and being of offering for many generations into the future, whatever I do here now. And to stay devoted to that as a way of life and a way of being, and then as in my prayer. And then as I do that, and then I make that prayer to the Oracle, then I can become a clear instrument for her.
You're listening to the Feed Your Wild podcast, a conscious lifestyle show about all things nourishing for your body, mind, and soul. I'm Vanessa Rodriguez, and join me for candid conversations with changemakers, exploring health and wellness, food as medicine, intuition and spirituality, and nature-based practices that will transform your health and feed all parts of your wild self. Hey there, welcome back to Feed Your Wild. I'm your host, Vanessa Rodriguez, functional nutritionist, Akashic Soul Record reader, and intuitive nourishment guide. And today we are speaking with the beautiful Isis Indria. If you're not familiar with Isis, she has so many beautiful offerings through her school and leading pilgrimages to Egypt and her temple, hosting community prayers and gatherings. I wanted to bring Isis on to speak into these topics of divination and oracle arts because, well, number one, so many of you listeners reaching out to me have questions about these topics, but also in a lot of the client sessions that I do, in my readings, but also in working with other healers, helpers, practitioners, I see this critical need for us to trust our own intuitive connection and the powers of prayer and co-creation when we come into it in relationship to the unseen worlds in a conscious and safe way. And for many of us, if you're anything like me, my only orientation was really through my family's religious understanding and some of the cross-cultural elements that came through. So for me, that looked like Catholicism, but then a lot of indigenous and African elements woven in because of the history of the Caribbean and just the evolution of the culture in that area. So I myself did not have an expanded frame of reference for things like divination or oracular consciousness. And today we're going to dive into what these are and the importance of sacred intuitive connection, not just for our personal health, growth, and evolution, but for that of the collective. Isis brings a wealth and diverse range of wisdom systems and teachings, including esoteric mystery studies, the art of ritual, healing arts, transpersonal psychology, earth-based wisdom traditions, and ritual theater. So she is such a wonderful guide leading us through these waters. Isis shares her history, her background, where she comes from, her ancestral lineage, and what got her onto this path of ritual as a way of life. She talks about the loss of her mom as that initiation and the variety of experience over the many years that culminated into the work that she does today. Isis dedicates her life to learning and creating platforms for teaching of the sacred sciences of the ancients, indigenous wisdom, cultural exchange, nature's intelligence, and inner transformation as pathways for moving forward. Whether you are a seasoned diviner or ritualist, or you're just beginning to dip your toes in these deep waters, I know that our discussion on the art of divination and oracular consciousness in the context of these modern times, contains pearls of wisdom for you. Isis illuminates the importance of ritual and the technology of prayer, how she uses it in her own life and work, and sheds light on some of the common misunderstandings around the art of divination, ritual, and the concept of oracle. Isis also shares the history behind the development of her own divination board, how it was birthed, and the way that she walks the path alongside and in service to her oracle and her unseen allies. We talk about how to cultivate trust and navigate the fear that might come up around participating in this kind of work so that you can truly step into a place and state of service and love. There's lots of other juicy bits within this conversation. So if you are able, I invite you to draw up a cup of herbal tea, sit outside with the sky and the elements, or buckle up if you're driving and take us along with you on the ride. All right, so here we go with Isis Indria. Born in Mesa, Arizona, indigenous to and raised on the island of Guam, Isis dedicates her life in service to prayer, education, and community activism. As a minister, culture creator, bridge builder, and fireplace keeper for the Oracle Clan, Isis is devoted to providing education platforms for her work and many other master teachers. To fulfill this mission, she birthed the Academy of Oracle Arts to bring forth an original approach to ancient teachings in a modern day. As an educator, her offerings are centered in oracle arts, ritual, divination, Egyptian cosmology, and hermeticism. Isis shares what she has learned along the way all over the world, online, through the school. She leads pilgrimages to Egypt, and in her temple, hosts community prayers and gatherings. Isis, thank you so much for saying yes and coming on the podcast.
Thank you so much for inviting me, Vanessa. It's an honor to be here.
I first came across you and your work last year, I believe, or maybe a couple years ago, in your Art of Divination class for Spirit Weavers. And just in connection and through other teachers and their connections to you. And I so appreciate your teachings. And I see that you also just finished a visit to Egypt, which is really beautiful. And I have a deep love and connection to Egypt as well. So I hope we get to chat a little bit about that today. But I'd love to first start with you and your story. I know that you came to so much of this work from an event at a very young age. So I'd love for you to share a little bit about, you know, your roots, where you come from, and how you started to get into this world.
Thank you. Well, first, I'd love to acknowledge that I'm currently inhabiting the ancestral homelands of the Nisenan people. This area is called Ulicha, currently known as Nevada City, but Ulicha is the Nisenan name, so I just want to acknowledge them here. I am Chamorro, native to the island of Guam, and three-quarters Chamorro and then a quarter German, so I just want to acknowledge my ancestors and yours and everyone who listens to in this podcast, just all of our ancestors that, you know, have brought us together for this particular session. So I just want to say thank you like that. So I was born in Mesa, Arizona, and my mom died when I was 4 years old. And that was a really significant moment in my life because, you know, my mom died, and my whole life really, I believe, has been guided by her and that experience. Because of her passing, my desire and commitment to commune with the other side, to really connect with her, has really led me on my journey. Her name's Deborah Naki. I call her Devora. So she's my main guide and ancestor in everything I do. And when she passed when I was 4 years old, we lived in Arizona for a little bit longer, and then my dad and I moved to Guam. And we moved straight into with my grandma and my auntie, my grandpa, and lived in a communal home with a farm and in a village, and Guam is made up of villages. And so I really was just immersed in a village experience pretty right away. My grandmother didn't speak full English. She spoke English, but she mostly spoke Chamorro. So I was learning really what it was like to be in a village experience in a new culture and in an island. And then that's really been super formative for my life. Obviously, just what village life in a continued colonized culture, you know, Guam has been colonized many times and still is, still navigating that, and how an indigenous community or culture still thrives and survives colonization and figures out a way to, you know, keep the traditions alive. It's been very formative for me, and I'm always learning more about that and, you know, how that, all the different, you know, nuances of that dynamic, you know. And that's really led to a lot of my deeper inquiry into the unseen and all the different ancestors and little beings and little people, and through my lineage lines where work with the unseen is a big part of where we come from. And then from there too, a lot of my community work of, you know, village community values that were really seated on Guam, so, and guided by Guam. So there's a little bit about my story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that once you dive into it, it's like this path of unfolding that's never ending. And so it sounds like so much wisdom through various lenses has really come into your experience. And what I love in a lot of what you talk about and teach is the accessibility for people to connect in with sources of wisdom. And so I'd love to touch on some key concepts here and sort of like break down even like your definition and lens of some of these concepts, because I know that while some folks listening in are well versed and maybe, you know, have done them for decades, but there are others that are maybe new to this path. And so when they hear things like the art of divination or oracles and oracular consciousness, there may not be a lot of reference for that, for understanding. So I thought we could touch in on that first and navigate through your lens. Like, what is the art of divination? And I know that there's a lot that we can get into in terms of like pulling the thread on that and a lot of misunderstandings, but I'd love to hear your perspective.
Yeah, thank you. Well, divination seems to be, at least in a lot of indigenous communities and cultures and ancient cultures, very common. And there are different ways and different kinds and maybe different terms. The way that I understand divination to be, the way that I've been taught and the way that I feel through experience of it, is communing in counsel with the divine and all the various expressions of the divine. And that in communing in counsel with the divine is, you know, sitting at the table at the altar to listen and pay attention and learn from the communication that's constantly communicating in the natural world, and those synchronistic moments and those alignments that occur when we sit and pay attention and listen to the life force of creation communicating through many, many different ways and things and people and experiences. And one of my understandings is that some of the roots of divination are really rooted in making offerings, because through my studies in the Egyptian cosmological world, is that there's this idea of a co-shaping. It's a co-shaping with the human realm, us as humans, and the natural realm and the divine realm. And through one of my favorite books, The Sacred Magic of Ancient Egypt, she says that, you know, the ancient Egyptians believed that the greatest human accomplishment was to have conscious understanding and conscious awareness on how we're always co-shaping with the human and the divine world, and how to be doing that with intention and everything we're thinking, saying, and doing, that thus becomes our habits, our behaviors, and our destiny. So one of the old ways I was taught is that some of the roots of divination are centered in making offerings. Like, what offerings? How can I feed? How can I nourish? How can I give back? How can I contribute towards a beauty way path continuing to unfold? And in that way, it's making of life an offering. So everything that we're thinking, saying, and doing is to keep giving back and to keep saying thank you. And that's something that I find to be really helpful. Gosh, it's just incredible what it is to be alive and to experience the beauty of this life and the majesty of creation that we're so blessed every day to get to experience in some fashion, even through all the hardships and all the challenges. And one of the things I'm sure each and every one of us have experienced and experienced pretty regularly is that moment that, you know, that person called when we had that thought, or that moment that the bird flew over when we said that thing. These synchronistic alignments that occur where there's like this communication happening between different realms that support, amplify, and or remind us of how interconnected and interdependent everything really is. You know, these ahas and these deja vus, and also these like moments of synchronicity and alignment where we really feel deeply connected. Everybody experiences that at some way, at some point. So it feels very natural to our way of being. And then part of, I find, when, you know, we discover deeper continued processes of our path unfolding as we continue the journey of becoming that never really ends, those synchronicities align up more and more and more. And that's, those are like the signposts and the ahas that help us, you know, and guide us on our paths moving forward.
Yeah. You know, I think about like my personal relationship with the art of divination and sort of the evolution of that and my path into these arts, so to speak, in a deeper relationship with the divine also occurred after my mom passed, and sort of wanting to seek answers and have a more direct connection with her. And so I began to dabble in like tarot and scrying and just various ways of connecting with information and receiving insight, and then also consulting people who would be able to give me readings intuitively. And I remember sharing some of this with like some family members and even some clients at that time when I started to, you know, bridge the intuitive stuff with my own work. And there were so many misunderstandings of this process, of this connection, and fear around it, right? Like, especially if there's the perspective that's coming from various religions that have sort of stripped away one's direct connection with God and Source. And anything that delineates from what is accepted in that particular religion is not accepted or is deemed even like potentially harmful, right? And so it was this interesting process, because as I looked at my family lineage, my family's from Puerto Rico, and so there's a lot of influence, not just the Catholicism, but that's very strong, that I saw they were connecting in, and that they wouldn't necessarily call it divination, right? So I'm curious for listeners who are like, either they themselves maybe hold a little bit of fear of this connection or sort of beginning to step onto this path where they start to work with things that maybe their family members don't fully accept, you know? Do you have words of advice for people who are starting to create that bridge for themselves?
Well, something I find that is a really beautiful doorway is to commune with our ancestral bloodlines and the lineage lines that run through who we are. You know, most of us are mixed and we have a lot of different lineages and traditions of us. And getting to know the mystical, magical, ritualistic, if those are drawn to ritual, or just the stories, you know, the stories of our, and the history and the herstory and the originals, as far back as we can go, original stories of our bloodlines, because that's a direct connection to our ancestors. And right there is so much wisdom and information, and so much unlocks, and all these doors of perception open when we start to build those relationships, because our ancestors are right here, you know? Mm-hmm. And I love to specifically reference, when I'm communing with my ancestors, particularly in relationship to opening up doors of perception around these ways. I like to reference benevolent ancestors, because some stories we have in our bloodlines are, you know, there's a lot there. Our ancestors went through a lot, that you know, and simultaneously, you know, what I've been taught is dreamed us into being here and now, and there's a lot of healing to keep doing, you know, forever. And so in that way, when I'm starting to build those relationships, because one of the things I've been taught is that, and some people believe this and some people don't, but I really love this. We all chose to be born for a reason, right? And our ancestors, all the work that they did is connected to, and the dreams that they had are connected to the life of our lives, the preciousness of our lives. And that in choosing to be born, we came here to fulfill our purpose, whatever that may be, discover, experience our life and fulfill our purpose, whatever that may be. Sometimes it changes, you know, over time. And also to continue to cultivate, do the transformational healing work all day, every day. As we continue our journey back into the light, you know, to assist everyone else along the way too, as much as possible. And then in that way, we can call upon our benevolent ancestors, guides, and allies to assist us, because what I've been taught is that there's so many friends and allies in the unseen realms. And some believe that in order for them to help, they have to be asked. And one of the ways that I was taught very early on is how to ask questions in a really solid container, in a very loving container with my benevolent ancestors, to start to build that communication, that relationship, and then ask for signs and symbols to show me that they hear me. And I found that that has been and continues to be a very simple, helpful practice. Now, in terms of the, I'm sensitive to use this term, but I'm going to use it, demonization of these practices, you know, and the fear that has unfolded because of it and the concerns. And there's a lot of healing there in and of itself. A lot of healing and all of the misunderstandings around this work. When we look into our ancestral bloodlines, we start to see those stories, because inside of each and every one of us is the original peoples and the colonizers, you know? And so inside our bloodlines, when we start to get to know those stories, that is the healing path in and of itself, of helping to bring understanding to all the things that were misunderstood. And when we do that work, I can only speak for me, when I do that work, I start to see the transformation occurring with A, my family members and my bloodlines and lineages, and thus who I attract or magnetize to be able to deepen in this work. And it's just a world of intense stories. And then simultaneously going back and doing that healing work in the present, in the now, helps to rewrite the stories so we don't pass things moving forward. Mm. Such a very important, you know.
So important. And thank you for bringing us back to our ancestors, because I think that that's number one. I feel like our ancestors are like, hello, we're here, especially in these times. But I think that that's something that everybody can get curious about, you know, whether like any judgments that they might have about their ancestors, positive or negative or whatever. I feel like that's a beautiful starting point to understand where we come from. Yeah, and build that connection.
And it's amazing, because the divinatory and dynamics in each and every one of us through the lens of our ancestral healing work, it's just wild. Divination is, as far as I can tell, in almost every culture and tradition that I've studied or looked into, like, there are so many ways to divine. I mean, some of the more obvious ones would be pyromancy, learning how to read and talk with and communicate with the fire. And then another one is hydromancy, learning how to read and communicate with the water. You know, seeing the messages and omens, signs, sigils, and patterns in water. Some of the old stories is that when a young girl, ways that they would see if a young girl was to be trained in the temples for divination was they'd bring her to water and ask her what she sees. And however she responded to what she sees in the water would be indicators if she was meant to train in these ways to become oracles for, you know, villages or families or communities or empires. And there's actually a great little, I was talking to my dear sister Eve, and there's this, I think it's in Wikipedia or something, but it has all the mancies.
Oh, cool.
And so you see pyromancy, hydromancy, capnomancy, and there's a whole long list of all the mancies that are all these different divination practices. And if you look deeper into them, the cultural roots from where they come from. Because if there's like a communication that's occurring all the time, there is that these doorways of communication are important to build relationships with. Like, for instance, I was just reading this article yesterday in a magazine called Yes, because I saw that my friend's sister, Leah, my friend Naima Penniman, her sister Leah Penniman's on the, had written an article.
Oh, we had Leah on the podcast.
Oh, you did? Amazing. Yeah. Well, perfect. And I was reading this article she wrote about Soulfire Farm that I'm sure she probably talked about in the podcast. And in the article, it talked about a Yoruban divination practice they did with palm nut to commune and feel into what trees are ready to be offered or brought down in service to the, you know, prayers of that land. And it, I just thought that was really fascinating that I opened that up. And that was, you know, there's a section in the article about that.
I love that. We love Leah. I'll make sure to link up her her podcast episode. It was quite some time ago. But I love how her work is just really getting out there. And that blend, that bringing in that spiritual connection in with the work that is so earthly that I feel is really important for these times.
Absolutely. I mean, in the ancient, you know, Egyptian and a lot of ancient traditions, there is no difference. You know, the soil is the key. You know, there's the cultivation of the soil is the spiritual process of the cultivation of the soil in our consciousness. And that farming and working with land is at the heart of the spiritual practice. That is how we, you know, the ancient Egyptians in mapping and getting and building a relationship with what's going on in the cosmos, you know, with planets and stars and things like that, and replicating that and building that in relationship to the, you know, the architecture of what we design is deeply woven and in communion with the earth and the soil and the waters. There is no difference.
Mm-hmm.
It's all the same.
And I think about how sort of the popularization of biodynamics. And I think about, well, one of the reasons that I think that might be is because it's bringing that sort of spiritual orientation to for people who don't have that connection or lineage. And yet it's there for so many like cultures and indigenous peoples since the beginning of our connection to Earth. So it's just really interesting, I think, how things are, I guess, coming back full circle now, because we must.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
Well, you touched a little bit on oracles, this concept of the oracle and oracular arts, and a lot of your offerings are centered in oracle arts. And I know that you also have a board that you created. I'd love to talk about, well, number one, like what is an oracle in, you know, in sort of like the modern context, and how can we work with oracles, especially today?
Yeah. So, I like this idea of oracular consciousness because I feel like it's this consciousness that everybody has access to. And oracles historically are known to be beings or vessels that people would come to commune with the divine or to receive messages, riddles, guidance, advice from the gods, goddesses, from the divine to assist in planet Earth in some fashion. And so like a classic one is that most people know about is the Oracle of Delphi in Greece, where people would come travel sometimes up to 2 years to just go and sit with the oracle. And oftentimes it was a she, perhaps even, you know, those that were they, and would sit upon a stool that had three legs, and each of the legs, one of the things it represented was past, present, and future, that would be above these cracks or fissures in the earth, and these gases would the stories are the gases would rise up, and people would come and ask questions, and then the oracles would tap into the pythoness, which is this python energy, life force energy that would move through them. And then they would provide information in the form of riddles or just direct words that then whomever received that would interpret and, you know, receive guidance to support them in their home, their family, their village, and their, you know, the empire, whatever they're leading. So that's one of the most popular oracles in history. And currently, I feel like the work, and a lot of times oracles historically later on were very much connected to prophecies to help with the future. And I do feel like at this point, oracles have the ability to tap into, and they did back then too, and even now, as far as what I feel, past, present, future, and time that is moving in multiple dimensions. I like to reference it as, like, the divination board particularly is an oracle root. It's a divination root inside a divination house, inside a divination world, inside a divination dimension, where there's a lot of different information and communication coming from the inside and then from different directions, depending on what we're paying attention to and what we're listening to in the manifest world. Now, in the context of now, part of what I feel why this work is emerging even more at this time in our human experience is because of one of the things that we've, you know, been noticing for the last year is the only thing that's constant is change. You know, we've heard that phrase forever. And it feels really real, especially in the last year. Mm-hmm. The ability to adapt to the changing times and open up our capacities, these innate intelligences and faculties and capacities that we all have, you know, intuition is a primary gateway into all of them. To then open those doors to A, our imagination, what we imagine, our thoughts, get deeper into our thought realms, like what are we thinking that, you know, obviously leads to manifestation, the word, the deed, the habit, behavior, and destinies. To then feel into how to adapt and what offerings or what to contribute towards the changing times as certain systems we've been designed and programmed to function in as they're breaking down and changing, per us all realizing it needs to then open up these capacities to help rebuild or assist and regenerate ones that, you know, have lasted through the ages in a modern way. And it takes all of us, because there's so many systems that are changing course right now, you know. This time was prophesized. And I feel like oracular consciousness is the ability to take the time to attune in, and open up these doorways in our own consciousness where we have access to more faculties and more of the intelligence, like inside of ourselves, just like with the water. You know, we hear so much that water carries the wisdom of the ages, because water never really leaves. It doesn't leave, it just changes form, you know. And so one of my elders was like, you know, the same water that is in your glass right now is connected to the water that your great, 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 great grandfather drank. Because that water just changed form, and it didn't ever leave. And my elder's like, the wisdom of the world is inside the water. And I think about that a lot, and I'm like, oh, wow. We are made of water, so does that also mean that too, you know? Mm-hmm. I'm sure many of us feel when we actually take the time to slow down and pay attention and listen on the inside, this infinite well of innate healing, transformation, and pearls of wisdom emerge. And right now, we need that. That's so necessary. Better together, it's going to take all of us, right, for this time of transition, where we're going. And so I feel like this emerging, you know, divinatory, oracular work that many people are feeling the call to and drawn towards is to open up those inner doorways and faculties. Now, there are lots of different divination technologies that, you know, you can work with. You know, for instance, what you mentioned, tarot. Tarot is very, very powerful, 100%. And inside tarot is so many mysteries. It unlocks so many mysteries. And then, for instance, we talked about pyromancy and hydromancy. I particularly work with a oracle divination board. It's a circular board that is made up of multiple different cosmological mapping systems inside of it. Tarot's in there, and Hermetic Kabbalistic Tree of Life, astrology, planetary relationships, you know, the energetic body system. And there's lots of different tools that you work with, and working with the holy elements. And so it's this, you know, altar of where the expressions of the natural world, expressions of the divine world, and then as the human, you know, to learn how to interact and converse, communicate, and co-shape. It's not necessarily designed to tell anyone their future. However, perspectives of the future can unfold, but it's really focused on really supporting one on one's path and supporting one in their own will and what they're creating versus trying to will something on someone. It's just to support the path moving forward. And I mean, I could talk about this for hours. I don't know if there's anything specific other than that you wanted to share, but I could go on for hours.
Yeah, well, and I wish that we could too, because there's so much here. But I'm fascinated by this board. And that was in one of the classes that I sat in on that you were teaching. You brought out this board. It's so beautiful. And I would love for you to share a little bit about the birth of this board. Like, there's so many different, just as you described, so many different connections to the mystery, the great mystery, source, the universe, and beyond through these various lenses. How did the seeds of this board first plant within you?
So in 2001, through a series of incredible alignments, my dear friends, Michael Manahan and Osiris Indria, we were gifted an oracle crystal ball from a man named Gabriel. We like to call him the Archangel Gabriel because he kind of just appeared and then disappeared. He came in like an angel and disappeared. You know, I haven't really talked to him in years. He brought us this crystal ball that we call the Oracle. And from there, working with this crystal ball, we didn't really know much about, I mean, I knew a little bit about scrying, but not fully. And at that point in 2001, I met one of my dearest teachers, William Kiesel, William J. Kiesel, who became and still is my guide through these mystery ways, one of my main guides. And so he was always there with me through the process. And when we started working with this crystal ball, it showed us 23 new archetypes. Rather than using a traditional tarot deck, we created 23 new archetypes with our friend Jody. And that became the Oracle Gatherings, which is a tarot series that was also an event series that included ritual theater and education and dance celebration and food. And it was really whatever the arc, however the archetype wanted to express itself. And so through the journey, you would receive a tarot card while going through the experience. And it took us about 10 years to get through all of the archetypes.
Wow.
Yeah, it was profound. One of the greatest teachings for me my whole life. I always return from learning. I keep learning from those experiences. But anyways, the Oracle, and then we would go to the Oracle crystal ball pretty regularly. And we started learning how to work with her and to receive instructions from her. We started learning rituals to work with her, and then we would follow her guidance. And we always kind of found over the years that the more we sort of stayed behind her and listened to what she had to say, things would flow a lot more effortlessly. And in that time period around 2004, I remember meeting with the Oracle of my dear friends who were also part of the Oracle Gatherings community, Dana and John Stream. And we were talking about a community living dynamic. And the Oracle gave a vision of this board. And I didn't know what it was. We started drawing it, started sketching it out. And just, I didn't, you know, I just kind of like let it be, you know, because I didn't know what it was. And, you know, because I do believe that some visions are ours to manifest, some visions aren't. You know, sometimes the same vision will come to like thousands and thousands of people. But there may be five or six that are meant to manifest that one. And then some visions are ours and ours to manifest. And learning, you know, I find that for me, it's like learning the difference. What's mine to do and what isn't. Anyway, so this vision came. And then 2000 years, you know, I continued on my path of study and studying a lot of mystery traditions. And, you know, I will forever. And then in 2017, through a series of events with my friend Johnny Ray, he made me a board for altars. And then, because I had told him about this board, but I didn't know what it was. And so then I was like so inspired and so grateful, and then drew the one that I had saw in a vision. And then he had it made. And then when he had it made, he simultaneously, a dear friend Maz was like, hey, I have some dice that I just wanted to gift to you. And there was an zodiacal astrological dice and a numerical dice for the houses and then a planetary. And then my friend Alejandra said, or then I was like, I think I'm supposed to toss the dice on the board. And then I started putting crystals on it. And then I realized I could read it. Mm. But I didn't know this was for. And then my dear friend Alejandra was like, will you give me a reading? I was like, okay. And so I gave her a reading. And I was blown away by, and she was, we were both blown away. She started crying. It was super profound for her, what was coming through me. And then she started like asking me to do these readings for people. And then all of a sudden, all the tools started coming together. And I realized why it took so long for the board to emerge is it took me 13 years of intensive study to be able to read it. Mm-hmm. And I don't feel like it's mine. You know, I feel like it's the oracles and I'm just an instrument for it, you know, mm-hmm. for her. And from there, it's all kinds of things started happening. Now we have an oracle clan and a fireplace and an altar and an apprenticeship program. And it's just the moment that that board emerged, it's like the legacy of the oracle unfolded in a whole new way. And it's just, I've learned over the years, and I'm still learning, is just to stay in communion with her and behind her. You know, I don't try to get in front of her. I stay behind her. And as I just kind of follow how she instructs me, everything flows very elegantly. So it's not about me. It's the opposite.
Hmm. Well, Isis, there's so much that I love about this story, but two things that are really standing out to me, and I think that are a huge part of like your ability, aside from, you know, this is something that was probably like pre-programmed or like, you know, contracted or that you had agreed to. But I feel that number one is your humility and curiosity about it, but also the trust. And I feel that that's a piece that I see so many people struggling with when it comes to saying yes, to trusting that the information that they receive or that they're hearing or seeing or feeling or sensing is accurate or true. And so I'd love to hear, have you had these challenges before, and how have you overcome them? Or how do you really hold that level of trust so that you can be this vessel for these divine gifts to come through?
It's a constant, continued devotion to the inner transformational work. And it doesn't really end, you know? You're always learning more about how to be more human and how to be more of a divine human and be an offering and of service, you know? And what I find that helps me particularly with the board to be a clear vessel is to all day, every day, do my continual healing work and work with people that assist me in that for myself. And then B, I really believe the importance of practice of prayer. Prayer can mean so many different things in so many different cultures and traditions. And in the context of this board, what I mean by that is before I do a reading, I always make a prayer to the oracle to be a vessel for her, an instrument for her, to be of service and of benefit and helpful. You know, may this board, may this reading be helpful, may it be a benefit. And in that way, may be some kind of offering into the web of consciousness. And please, Oracle, I've asked you to help me be a clear instrument for you. And so with the prayer and the container that I set up, then I'm behind her versus it being me doing the reading. I become a vessel for her and I'm sitting behind the prayer. And then where the trust comes in is that it's not about me giving a reading. It's about what she shows me. It helps me stay humbly at the altar. And usually where I can tell where some of me gets involved is if I kind of like, you know, I remember when I first started doing readings where I was like, I have a hard time reading it. or challenges reading it, and or I kind of jump ahead, or I'm sort of feeling blank. There's certain signs and symbols around me personally that show me that some of me's involved to help me become more of an instrument for her. And where the trust comes in is devotion to be an instrument of service on behalf of the liberation of myself and liberation of all beings for the benefit, to be of benefit and be of offering for many generations into the future, whatever I do here now. And to stay devoted to that as a way of life and a way of being, and then as in my prayer. And then as I do that, and then I make that prayer to the oracle, then I can become a clear instrument for her. And so it even becomes less about trust. It just becomes being an open vessel. And then all this, the signs and symbols start to show themselves very quickly. And then what comes when I'm not in a divination reading is continued commitment to learning and studying too. Mm-hmm. It's a whole path and way of life, you know, where the whole world becomes divination. Everything is communication.
Yes. Yeah. I love how you touch on the, not just the power of prayer, but the technology of prayer. And I access the Akashic Records in my work. And for the podcast, I do like a monthly collective reading. And the way that I access the records is through a sacred prayer. And I feel the difference of, mm-hmm. you know, just the everyday connection that we all have, that intuitive connection to source and to ourselves and to information. But then when we connect in with that technology of prayer and lay that invisible grid, it's almost like it, as you were saying, it takes us to a different state where it's not us doing the thing. And I think maybe that's also what a lot of folks might fear is, and I hear this because I train a lot of healers and practitioners. They have the fear of the responsibility, right? Or of like the fear of fucking up, or the fear of not being, quote, right with information. And what I'm hearing in what you're saying is that none of that is our business.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
And no, and then the classic phrase, know thyself, you know, in the mysteries where, you know, as within, so without, for sure, you know, and the more we get to know ourselves, we can tell when we're in a clear state or not.
Mm-hmm. Do you teach and train others in working with the board?
Yeah, I do. We have a year long Oracle Arts Apprenticeship program. We have one more coming up of the year. I'm starting a new one in September, October. Another year-long apprenticeship, and then an apprenticeship 2 program. And then on the Academy of Oracle Arts website, we just released the intro to the Art of Divination, which is introducing the board and the different technologies on the board and how they work together. And then I share a bit. We do a reading there. And then also on Ritual Community, which is our community membership platform, I do monthly divination readings there also. And then we have all different kinds of classes related to ritual. So yeah, through the Academy of Oracle Arts and Ritual Community, there's a lot of different ways to get to know ritual practice from the Oracle Crystal Ball, from this particular lineage and divination. And then also ways to open up these faculties. And something I'm very, very excited about is I'll be doing a course through Shift Network called A Doorway into Oracle Arts. It's a 7-week course starting in the month of April, where we'll be going through 7 different stages of opening up these faculties that is innate to each and every one of us.
Beautiful. Well, we'll make sure to have all the links, of course, set up in the show notes. And this podcast will be out in time for that.
Oh, awesome.
Yeah. So I encourage everybody to check that out. I also tuned into your workshop, Isis. Really beautiful. And I love how accessible you are as well. So I appreciate that about you.
Well, I just want to acknowledge my dear friends, Roxanne and Sonia, because I'm very comfortable being a hermit and just, you know, small little pod here in our temple. But they've really been the ones that have pretty much forced me to get more online. So I'm super grateful to them for that. They're the whole reason why. So thank you for that. I just want to honor them.
Yeah, sometimes we need our friends to like kick us over the edge.
Yeah, totally.
Thank goddess for them, yeah. Well, I would love for everybody to connect in with your work. I do have a question that I love to ask guests who come on, and that is, what is one thing that is feeding your wild right now, whether that's body, mind, or soul?
You know, spring right now in the current moment is feeding my wild, and because it's, you know, we just started getting back into the soil again and starting getting all the flowers blooming, and we're starting to prepare our gardens. So that is one of the main reasons. And then the primary reason for my life right now is I'm currently carrying a child, and it's the most psychedelic experience I've ever had, that's for sure. And just the wild nature of the fact that womb carriers perform miracles all day, every day. So I just want to give a shout out to all of the womb carriers and the mothers and the grandmothers and great-great-grandmothers and all of those that have birthing and continue to birth our species through this miraculous dynamic of giving birth, you know? So that is the primary just inspiration for what is keeping me wildly rooted, you know?
Yeah, talk about wild and primal. And is this your first? Is this the initiation?
Yeah. And the first time we were just in Egypt, and it was our first family trip, three of us with a small group, you know, because we do pilgrimages every year. And it was just so amazing to be in the temples, and just that's where the baby started really kicking. And to feel where the baby wanted to go and what temples and what walls and the Nile, and you know, we swam in the Nile, and just what elements of Egypt were really inspiring the baby.
Yeah.
That was just so incredible.
Beautiful.
Magic.
Yes. Oh, big magic. Big magic. Well, I'd love for listeners to maybe walk away with one last parting piece of guidance. If anything wants to come through you right now, I'd love to invite that, if that feels like it wants to come through.
Yeah, I'll just share a piece of wisdom that my dad passed to me. You know, I share this every time because it just guides me every day. He said, if there was one piece of wisdom that I could offer you that's been so helpful for my life, it'd be to do your best to maintain a state of awe and wonder. Because from that place of awe and wonder, the world will keep opening up and the world will keep blossoming before you.
So, so lovely. Yes. And so important. It's like, especially in these times and last year, I know we can get kicked out of the awe and wonder sometimes. And so coming back to it and being with a lot of these very challenging and difficult events that we've experienced, and nonetheless feeling into that. I appreciate that word of advice.
Thank you. And, you know, just want to say before we close here, you know, thank you for what you're doing. And, you know, it's really beautiful to hear your story and what you're creating here. And just may all the beauty keep blossoming for everyone.
Thank you. Thank you. And thank you to everybody listening and your participation. It's like every time I hop on the podcast, I sort of like open up the field and, you know, I say a prayer, and it just feels like it's growing every day. So thank you for everybody tuning in too. Isis, you're wonderful. Thank you for all that you do and for coming on and sharing your wisdom and your beauty.
Thank you. Blessings to our ancestors.
Hey there, I made something for you. One of the biggest challenges that I hear from people is that they are feeling stuck when it comes to their health. You're a smart, capable, and creative change maker, right? And you know what you should be doing for your health? So what gives? Well, it's not about willpower. And I wanted to create something that would help you to unlearn the things that are keeping you stuck so that you can get out of your own way and master the mindset of health. That's why I created Wildly Unstuck, where you'll learn the top five things that I have found to sabotage your health goals and what to do about them. You'll learn what it really takes to become committed and unstoppable when it comes to your health goals and find the clarity you've been looking for so you know exactly what to do to get back into alignment. And I made it totally free. So if this is something that you want to dive into and create a vision and soul goals for your health and your life and bring your gifts to the world, because we know that we need it, then I invite you to join us in Wildly Unstuck. You can find that at wildlyrooted.com/unstuck. I'll see you on the other side.